1 Samuel chapter 1. We're going a long way back. This is the transition between the judges over Israel and the kings of Israel. And this begins that process. Samuel is the last of the judges over Israel. So we move from the judges, and if you look at the book of Judges, you realize that the people that we refer to as judges leading Israel were from all different walks of life, but they took the lead. They led out in campaigns to save and turn around the nation. And Samuel is a prophet. And this, you know, goes all the way back to the beginning, before he's born, to his mom and his dad. And that's where the story begins. That's where his beginnings are explained to us. Verse 1, there was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim. Now, y'all say that twice, and I'll give you extra credit. Of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, son of Jerome, son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zuph, an Ephrathite. And he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah. The name of the other, Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. This man, Elkanah, went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Now remember that there are three feasts a year which God ordered the Jews to travel and to celebrate, to have these festivals and to worship at the temple three times a year. But if you can't go three times a year, the rule is go once a year. And Elkanah was in that situation. He went once a year. And, of course, the saying today is that if you can't go once a year, at least go once in your lifetime. And so he went up to worship every year in Shiloh. So, you know, we have to take a step back to when that's where the sacrifice was. That's where the tabernacle was. It was in Shiloh. You know, we're edging up to that point where David says, it's not right that I have this beautiful home and God dwells in a tent. There's something wrong with that. And so, of course, Solomon built the temple in Jerusalem. But in Shiloh, they are worshiping, they are sacrificing, they are having the festivals. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. Now, in our studies beyond this, we know that those two characters are not good characters. They did not walk in the steps of their father to honor and glorify God. Verse 4, when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and her daughters portions. Again, we pause just to say that when the priest, as the priest serving that year in his turn, they sacrifice an animal. But of course, the priest was to eat from that sacrifice. So it was offered unto God, but also the priest got his portion from that. And he had a large family. And so he's taken that portion and given the appropriate portion to his family. But the notice here in verse number 5, unto Hannah, he gave a worthy portion. Now, worthy, we say, well, that's the appropriate portion. No, the inference here is he gave her more than he gave everybody else. He wanted people to notice the difference, that he was really pouring out the favor onto Hannah. And it's explained there in verse 5, for he loved Hannah. Does it say that about his other wife? Doesn't say that anywhere, does it? By the way, it says here in verse number 2, Peninnah had children and Hannah had no children. Can you name me any of the children of Peninnah? You can't, can you? I don't know of them. But who is the child of Hannah? Samuel, right? We're going to get there. We're not there yet, right? You're right. No, she didn't have any yet, but we're going to get there. And his name is in the Bible. And so, you know, we look at our disadvantages sometimes and people treat us negatively or wickedly, but God has a way of turning the table, doesn't he? And he pivots to the favor of Hannah. He loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. Verse 6, her adversary also provoked her sore to make her fret. I mean, it was her intention to hurt Hannah's feelings every chance she got. How many of you ever knew somebody like that? Right? I mean, they just want to hurt people's feelings. Every chance they get, they attack people and they humiliate people. And that's what's going on here. Why do people do that? Jealousy is the common answer. Anybody got a different answer than that? Just hateful. You know, here's the reality. Yes, I'm sure that she noticed that Elkanah loved Hannah more. And so she was jealous. Of course she was. But people develop those attitudes. They develop those personalities. And, you know, sometimes we can get into one of those ruts, if you will, or those personality ruts, and we don't even recognize what we've done. We become negative about everything, and we attack everything, and we got a snide, snarky remark about everything, and we don't even recognize it because that's just who we have become. And so we need somebody around us to call us out for that. How many of you have somebody that will call you out for stuff when you're wrong? All right? We need somebody to call us out and tell us when we're wrong and put us back on track. And we have to have the heart to hear that. Sometimes when people tell us we're wrong, instead of accepting that we're wrong and changing, we fight back and we start attacking them. And we've got to make sure that we have somebody we can trust that when they tell us we're wrong, we take note of it and say, well, if they said I'm wrong, I need to really listen to that. Well, anyway, she made her to fret. Verse 7, and as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she, Peninnah, provoked her, Hannah. Therefore she wept and did not eat. She was just broken. She was just in such a state where she had no appetite. And stress will do that to you. Grief will do that to you. And that's where she is. That's her situation. Now think about this. I want you to set yourself in it's the Passover, and we're at Shiloh, where the tabernacle of God is, where the Ark of the Covenant is, and all of the special things that God had Moses and the people of Israel design way back when. And you travel from this place. Now, where they lived was almost due west of Shiloh, right on the edge of a hillside. And as they travel from there and they come to Shiloh, and I can imagine just approaching the city, and I hear the music. Do you hear the music? And you hear the laughter and the people, and there's lots of people traveling with you, and everybody's just so excited. We would compare it to what in America? Christmas time. Man, isn't that the most festive time of the year? And when do we start looking toward and forward to Christmas? Right, January, right? December 26th. I saw somewhere the other day somebody put up the number, said it's only 100 and so many days till Christmas. But we think about that. We're, you know, Christmas. Well, we have songs, and we have special music, and we have special decorations, and we might travel to our family. And Christmas is one of those days where people go to the house of God. And, you know, when we come and there's special decorations, well, it's just a big celebration. Lots of food, special for that time of year. And so here we are traveling to Shiloh once a year. And all of the company of our friends and family are there, and our kids and our wives are going with us, and we're traveling to Shiloh, and we're approaching the city, and oh, it's such a big bustling crowd, but it's a holiday, festive time, everybody's singing and polite and courteous, you know, that time of the year. So they get there, and it's such a celebration, and Peninnah starts in on Hannah. Who do you think you are? I don't even know why you came. You should have just stayed home. You're here reminding him that he's not blessed. You just imagine the the vicious venom that's pouring out of her heart and out of her mouth. All the people are celebrating, and here's Hannah crying, broken, stressed. Everybody's eating and laughing, and Elkanah comes to her, and he, you know, he's giving everybody else a bologna sandwich, and to her he brings a steak, right? And he sets it before her, but she did not eat. Verse 8, Elkanah said, her husband said to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? Why eatest thou not? Why is thy heart grieved? Am not I better to thee than 10 sons? What does that tell you? It tells me that Elkanah knew what Peninnah was doing. He knew why she was crying. He knew how vicious that other wife of his was. And so, you know, here he is caught in the middle, trying to keep the peace, trying to bring the joy, and trying to bring the festive celebration to their hearts. And not only that, but he's serving in the tabernacle among the priests, and he's doing the work, and then he comes back home to this. He comes back to his family when everybody ought to be happy, and instead he's stressed in his heart. He says to Hannah, am not I better to thee than 10 sons? Oh, he loves her. Verse 9, so Hannah rose up after they had eaten, and after they had drunk. Remember, it's a big celebration, lots of wine. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord, and she was in bitterness of soul. She was broken. And she prayed to the Lord and wept sore. She vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. And she's praying, and she's just so broken, and tears running out of her eyes. And in fact, as we look at it, it says that if you'd been standing there, you wouldn't have heard what she said because her lips moved, but her prayer was within. And she prayed. Verse 12, it came to pass as she continued praying that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart only. Her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she had been drunken. And Eli, verse 14, said to her, how long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. Okay, now let's take a step back and think about Eli. What would you say about him and what he has said? What's his attitude? What is his perception? What's been building up in him to make this pour out? His sons, all right? He's got trouble at home too, doesn't he? What else could it have been? Was his wife? Okay, could be that. Here's Eli, think about it, as he sits there, and this is the man of God, right? This is the man who talks to God and ministers to the people, and now he sits back and he watches all of these people who are supposed to be there to serve God, and what are they doing? Getting drunk. This is about him looking at God's people saying, God, you have completely turned this celebration upside down. I hear these people that criticize those who celebrate Christmas. And, you know, we've talked about when Jesus was probably born, not in December. But there are people who come out around Christmas time and, boy, they really get amped up about it. And the reason is because they're criticizing what they're really trying to get across is that we have taken a day, a season, that was intended to be a day to celebrate God, and what have we done with it? We've commercialized it. We've made it about money, and we've made it about parties, and we've made it about, in some points, wickedness, drunkenness. Yeah, yeah. So I see the critics as they sit on their post next to the temple, and they have the same criticism today. But I see Eli sitting there watching God's people as they've traveled from Dan to Beersheba and all points in between to come to Shiloh at a time of sacrifice and prayer and worship. And they've turned it into reveling and drunkenness. And so I see the preacher sitting there on that post just disgusted with how this has turned into. And Hannah, you know, nobody else comes to the temple, right? Everybody else is at the party. But Hannah makes her way to the temple, and he sees her over there just, and he says, "You're drunk." And she says, look at what she says. Verse number 15. "No, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink." Notice when it said, after they had eaten and they had drunk, she says, "But not me, I wasn't there. I didn't drink it. I didn't eat. I didn't have an appetite. I don't have a desire for wine. But I have poured out my soul before the Lord." Verse 16, "Count not thy handmaid for a daughter of Belial." Oof, look at that. You see, her attitude is also that this should be a time of celebrating God and not pagan worship or pagan behavior. "I'm not a daughter of Belial. Out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto." Verse 17, "Eli answered and said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him." Now this is the man of God. This is the high priest. This is the leader of Israel, at least in a spiritual sense. Supposed to be Eli. And he says to, this is the most powerful man in Israel, Eli. And he says to Hannah, "God give you what you want." Verse 18, she said, "Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight." So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. Can't you see Penina sitting at the table when Hannah comes back? Kind of a little bounce in her step, big smile on her face. She says, "What have you been up to? What has that girl been doing?" Something. So she says, "Something's up. Something's happening." Yeah, her whole countenance, her whole attitude's changed. Her spirit has been healed. Her heart is no longer grieving. Her tears are dried up. She sits down and she looks at that big old steak that he put in front, and she eats the whole thing. Now, that's not in here, but that's what happened. You find that in a Pahokee translation. What's that? That's it, right? She ate that steak, and I don't know anyway. She enjoyed her meal, and she drank the wine, and she celebrated, and she was happy, and she was laughing and visiting. Everything changed. Everything turned around. Just like that, by her prayer, when she poured her heart out, and she didn't hear from God, she didn't hear from heaven. But the man of God said, "God grant you your petition." And his word was solid. His word was heard in heaven. Remember, I know that we've already looked ahead in Eli's life and we see how things went downhill. But at this point in his life, he's walking with God. At this point in his life, he's sitting there looking at God's people thinking, "What has happened to these people? They need to come back to prayer and come back to God." And when he speaks, God answers. God agrees with his statement. Verse 19, "They rose up early in the morning, and they worshiped before the Lord, and they returned and came to their house to Ramah." Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and you understand that is in the biblical sense. "And the Lord remembered her," verse 20, "It came to pass when the time was come about, after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son and called his name Samuel." saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. And so that is what Samuel means, asked of the Lord, asked of God. Verse 21, and the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah went not up, for she said to her husband, I will not go up till the child be weaned, and then I will bring him that he may appear before the Lord, and there abide forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seemeth thee good. Tarry until thou hast weaned him, only the Lord establish his word. So the woman abode and gave her son suck till she weaned him. Verse 24, when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bullocks, one ephah of flour, a bottle of wine, brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. They slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli. She said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition which I asked of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. So this child, don't you know that this mama, just she taught her boy all about God. As long as she had him, as she held that baby, she did what probably many of us have done. She sang to him about God and about the love of God and singing the words of the Lord. Put it in song and singing to her son, so that when he was able to walk and take care of himself, he's weaned, okay, so he's able to take care of himself, she brings him to the house of the Lord and says, this is where you're going to live now. And I don't see any of Peninnah's sons there, do you? But Hannah gave him back to God. It was her desire that he would be born. It was her desire that he would belong to God and serve God. As we go to chapter 2, we go all the way to verse 11. Verse 1 says, Hannah prayed and said, my heart rejoiceth in the Lord. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies because I rejoice in thy salvation. And in verse 1, I like that. She said, my mouth is enlarged. She said, I've listened to Peninnah ridicule me and put me down and say the harshest, most wicked, ugly things. And now I can just say, ha, ha, ha. She says, my voice is bigger than hers now. Because don't you know that after all those years of terrorizing Hannah, now when Hannah got pregnant, don't you know that took a little step out of Peninnah? And then when the baby actually was born, and don't you know with Elkanah, as much as he loved Hannah, don't you just see him just so joyous over that boy, celebrating, just gleaming over that boy? Verse 2, there is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. Talk no more exceedingly proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth. Who's she talking to? For the Lord is a God of knowledge. By him actions are weighed. The bows of mighty men are broken. They that stumbled are girded with strength. So we're seeing the contrast here. The mighty are broken. Those that stumbled are strengthened. Verse 5. They that were full have hired out themselves for bread. They've enslaved themselves to even eat. They that were hungry ceased being hungry. So that the barren hath borne 7. She that hath many children is waxed feeble. The Lord killeth and maketh alive. Bring down to the grave and bringeth up. The Lord maketh poor and maketh rich. He bringeth low and lifteth up. He raises up the poor out of the dust. And lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill. So let them among princes to make them inherit the throne of glory, for the pillars of the earth are the Lord's. He has set the world upon them. He will keep the feet of his saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength shall no man prevail. Verse 10, the adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Out of heaven shall he thunder upon them. The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth. He shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. Verse 11, Elkanah went to Ramah, to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. So they left that boy there. Now, what happened when he got left there? Well, he started at the bottom. What do you imagine they'd have a boy do? Go get the wood. Go get the water. Clean this. Dust that. Move this. Just little chores. I tell you, you'll never find great value at the top if you don't start at the bottom. You know, it's one of the things about starting at the bottom and working your way up, and it seems menial, and it seems like the task of, you know, anybody could do it. Well, that's why you're there, because you're anybody. And do it. And do those menial tasks and frivolous things. And get bossed around and told what to do. And as you go through the ranks, you learn how to manage and you learn how not to manage. And you learn all of the positions. So that when you do finally reach the top, you have respect for everyone in the organization. And that's, so Samuel begins here as a boy. And he works his way up. Until eventually, as we advance in this book, until he eventually becomes the prophet of God. Comments, questions, criticisms, concerns? All right, let's take a break.